Welcome to our podcast entitled Business Continuity and Epidemic Pandemic Conditions. Let me put this podcast in context. We've been working on business continuity for the last several weeks when the first reports of the swine flu began to surface. So what we did over the last few days was to really focus a piece of that research on the particular conditions going on now to see if that made any other changes to the plans people are making for business continuity and disaster recovery. Now, I'm joined today by Steve Taylor. Steve, it's great to have you here today.
Thanks so much, Jim. Great to be here, and thanks for hosting this.
Now, I'm pleased to do this, Steve. Now, obviously, you've been the one driving the majority of this research, again, both generally into business continuity disaster recovery plans, as well as any potential impact from the outbreak of swine flu. So, Steve, why don't you give us just a little bit of background on what you've been doing, what you've been finding?
Okay, thanks very much, Jim. Well, yes, indeed, we are in the midst of an evolving epidemic, and we have no idea whether it's going to be an epidemic or a pandemic, exactly how far this is going to go. But certainly it served as a wake-up call to me to say, hey, gee, I wonder how folks are going to be dealing with this and how prepared they are to deal with this from a corporate perspective. So we really decided to home in on this with a very quick survey just to find out what was happening, and what we found out was that we are, not surprisingly, not prepared. Folks seem to be, for the most part, unprepared for outbreaks that happen to be within their own offices. And one of the other things that people really haven't thought a lot about, I believe, in terms of business continuity, is cases in which the parents are out of the office and need to be able to telecommute because they have to stay home and take care of their children. So what we're hoping is that, obviously, for the world, that this will be of minimal import so far as the severity of the outbreak itself, but that it will serve as a wake-up call for all of us. In terms of looking at business continuity in general, of course, we all say we have a disaster recovery or business continuity plan, but even though it's always important, it's something that tends to want to be one of those things that gets pushed to the back and really is not thought of immediately as something that's critical to keep on updating on a regular basis. And again, we're going to be doing deeper research into this over the next 2 or 3 weeks, but what we're afraid that is happening here is that it's always something that's viewed as being extremely important only after it's too late to really do a lot about it, because every time there's a major tragedy, a major hurricane, a major earthquake, et cetera, then everybody gets real excited about business continuity, and then it quickly decays in terms of importance. And finally, one of the other things that we'll be talking about a little bit later is that it seems that as we evolve from an industrial age to an information age economy, we're really seeing kind of a dichotomy of the way that people split on this. Now, so far as our survey base is concerned here, we had over 200 completions of the survey on Monday and Tuesday, April 27th and 28th, as the epidemic was just starting to unfold there. We had a worldwide base, and as you can see from the slide here, it's our typical Webtorials community who responded here. We did not see any super huge significant breakdowns when we did cross tabs by demographics, but we do have the demographics available for you at the end of the survey just as an appendix. So what did we find out here? And forgive me for reiterating some of the key findings here, but what we found out was that over half of the people either don't have business continuity plans that address a medical epidemic / pandemic, or they minimally address it. And the second major finding that we had was that the current economic conditions have resulted in a decrease in the ability to plan, implement, or support these business continuity issues as they come out. And finally, what we found was that, once again, it is serving as somewhat of a wake-up call, because we do see that it's going to be having a pretty good impact in terms of the number of people who will be updating their plans. Jim, is this making sense so far?
No, it really does, Steve. I was in New York earlier this week having dinner with a handful of senior IT executives on the topic of, you know, how the challenging economy was impacting their IT organization. And one of the two of the executives was quite clear in terms of their disaster recovery business continuity. In general, we weren't talking about the swine flu. He said those backup circuits and some of the hot standbys with, you know, for years supported, we had to cut them. His goal was to cut the IT budget by 15%, and they didn't like taking out those backup capabilities, whether it was, you know, WANs or servers, but that was one of the only ways they were going to reach the 15%. So I'm not pleased by some of your findings, Steve, but I'm really not that surprised.
Gosh, you know, that's really scary thinking that what we're looking at here is not only not having the plans, but having to scale back on the plans that we already have, because this is something that is going to happen sooner or later.
Well, let's stick with that for a second, Steve. I mean, every organization that I deal with, every IT organization, and I apologize for the cliches, but it's true these days, it's doing more with less. They've had some reductions in force. They're not hiring people. There's all this new work coming on. So in addition to not having the money, or feeling they don't have the money for the backup circuits, backup servers, I don't see where they really have the headcount to really allocate them to continue to update the kinds of plans you're talking about.
Exactly. And in fact, we'll get to that slide in just a moment. Why don't we move on to the next slide and just kind of look at the numbers behind these statements we've made, just so that we aren't accused of doing proofs by blatant assertion, which is often happens with analysts. If we look at the slide in terms of the awareness of the epidemic and pandemic, and is this something that's part of your business plan, to me it's really scary when I look at the fact that 23% don't have it at all in their BC plan, 36% it's only minimal, somewhat well 28%, and only 13%. That says 87% do not have it as an extensive part of their backup and business continuity plans, which I just find really scary.
It is scary because it's not the first time in the last few years we've had this potential for a pandemic. So this is not like whoever would have thought of that. So you're right, Steve. This is somewhat startling.
Yeah, because it's something that will happen. You know, everybody 2 or 3 years ago was very concerned about the avian flu, and then the avian flu pandemic didn't happen yet. And so everybody kind of said, okay, well, but you would have thought that at that point folks would have at least started putting things into place. You also mentioned the current economic conditions. I think that the first slide on this, where we ask, what's the how the current economic conditions affected the staffing capability to plan, implement, and support business continuity functions in the event of an epidemic or pandemic, are a little bit misleading in that 50% are saying there's little change in terms of planning, in terms of implementing, in terms of supporting. We do see that there is not anything huge here, it looks like, on the surface, but we have to also remember that this is already assuming that folks have had cutbacks. So we are doing more with less, and so this is just one part of it.
Okay.
Jim, I know that what we usually like to do is to drill down on these things a little bit, so I put together another slide where I threw away that middle 50% and looked at the other 50% and said, okay, for those who, if we throw those away and just look at the ones who have some changes, this is pretty impressive. Obviously, it's even a little bit surprising that there is an increase at all, but we're seeing that the increases here for plan, implementing, and supporting, which are, by the way, the three bars, the ones who have some increase are about the same number as some ones that have a significant decrease, which means then if we look at the ones with a significant with some decrease, wow, pretty good numbers there, or pretty bad numbers.
Those really stand out to me, obviously. They dwarf the others. There's no question about that.
Right. So really, if you look at the far left and far right columns and the two middle columns and compare those, obviously it's really such a shame, because we wrote about in the Network World newsletter back in February about the need for having business continuity and the way that you have to have health care and network care going hand in hand. So
right.
Speaks for itself. Now, I think actually going on to the next slide in terms of reviewing plans, we may have done our data sample just a little bit early because with the data sample that we were working from, we were looking at Monday and Tuesday and kind of didn't know at that point how much this was going to be in the news. And as of Friday when we're doing this recording, it's continued to escalate, and hopefully more people are looking at whether or not it's going to prompt them to review their business plans. I do think it's interesting, though, that at least a third, we have the 24% with moderate impact, 12% with a strong impact, and 2% that makes it critical, that hopefully we are going to see people reviewing their plans sooner than they would have otherwise. Of course, we can always be optimistic and say, well, gee, they were going to review their plans every 3 months, but I don't think that's very realistic. What do you think?
I think that's very unrealistic.
So, I guess my major message is, hey, guys, let's think about how we need to really get serious about this. Finally, and I'm certainly not going to go into detail in terms of all of the percentages here, we did ask folks to what extent each of the following areas was able to function effectively from a remote or teleworking site. Mm-hmm. And by the way, without getting into all the calculations, these are sorted from top to bottom in terms of the ability. Not surprising, and makes good sense, and I'm proud to see that the IT staff is the most well able to have full capabilities. Sales and marketing, really not too surprised in terms of today's workplace, or engineering. It's interesting when we get down to the core business operations, because there we do see that there are a few that are able to function fairly well. And this is where we started really seeing the dichotomy between the industrial and the information-oriented technologies here, at least the best we could tell from looking at the comments. Jim, any thoughts on this that you see totally surprising here? Or
no, I think this really makes an awful lot of sense. Obviously, you know, a lot of salespeople work remotely anyway. They're on the road, so they're not worried about going to a corporate building and what happens if they can't get to it for some reason. And, you know, same with IT staff. I mean, this is the good news, bad news. Good news, IT staff can, you know, have the capability to work from anywhere. The bad news is we're pretty much expected to be working 7x24 from everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's been a growing trend. So I look at that, and I understand the pride you mentioned, Steve, but that capability comes off the backs, if you will, of a lot of IT people that are just pretty much on 7x24.
Exactly. I mean, thank goodness we're at that point, because in many cases the network is the business. And speaking from that network is the business perspective, mm-hmm. one of the other things I wanted to just do is to usually we don't get a tremendous number of interesting comments on one of these, but we actually got a lot of interesting comments on this particular survey. And this first set of comments here, I'm certainly not going to read all of them, but looks a lot about things that are industrial age or require feet on the ground type of work. And, you know, the comment here, you can't produce or refine oil from home, obviously. So there are some industries that just, regardless of how good the business continuity plan is, you're not going to be able to do but so much to make it something that you can do from home. I was, though, particularly struck by the second comment on here. We're a school. Our primary function depends on the classroom, so remote operations isn't a huge option. Jim, I think that's something that probably is one of the biggest areas for potential change over the next 4 or 5 years in two ways. Number one is, as we've already seen, schools are one of the first places that get closed down when
yep.
we have something serious happening. And as you go higher and higher by grade level, and as you have more and more pervasive internet connectivity at high speeds to the home, there's really no good reason that schools shouldn't be starting to have plans for contingencies of at least 2 or 3 days worth of operations, if not 2 or 3 weeks worth of operations. Very key element of society here, and we can't afford to just let everybody be out of school. And, you know, for the kids, I guess it's about bad news because it means no more snow days. But it also goes hand in glove with the fact that what we have here is a case where we have to have that connectivity to the remote office, home office, as we've always called it, both for the parents to be able to continue to work, but also for the kids to continue to be able to be educated.
Well, Steve, you hit on a hot button of mine. I was doing distance learning 12, 15 years ago, and you also used the phrase snow days, and I think that's a very important concept here because it's not just the horror of a pandemic, it's a fact of life, at least in the northern half of the U.S., that there's this thing called snow, and you'll be, you know, out of school for a few days. I don't like the following statement, Steve. I'm going to make it, which is I've worked with a number of educational organizations, and they just are not on the front lines of changing how they deliver their services. They're some of the more reactive organizations. And so while I agree with you, and I think the, you know, the capability is largely there, I think you and I had the conversation, it's going to be several years, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, before that really is widespread.
Yeah, but after all, that's why we're doing these things, is to say, hey, we need to be thinking about this as a 3, 4, 5, 6 year plan,
yeah,
and not what are we going to do next week because, oh, darn, here a disaster has happened. I mean, it's only going to get worse or more critical as time goes on. And the good news is the technology is out there if we can get it implemented.
I agree entirely.
Okay. The next set of comments are almost the opposite in terms of these are folks who said, hey, we're already well-equipped. But as you can also see from the comments here, they are primarily information-based as opposed to being industrial or product-based types of industries. And then when we get on to the third page of comments, top comment talks very well about someone who said, hey, you know, essentially we could do everything from a remote site if we needed to. The last two comments I think are good. One was we're already in the normal process of reviewing the business continuity plan, and so they were saying, hey, we don't need to review it again, but we're already in the midst of this. But then the last one's kind of scary too. The business is getting used to alerts and considering these alerts as false alarms. I'm uncharacteristically almost left speechless on this one.
Yet it is disturbing when people become numb to, you know, potential situations. I mean, obviously, we will hopefully have more false alerts than alerts. I mean, that some of these things will not occur, the SARS viruses, et cetera. On the other hand, there have been enough situations of a big scale, also the smaller scale, where just electricity is out, there's a snowstorm, whatever else it is, Steve, that this is a disturbing finding, or a disturbing comment, excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I want to start kind of wrapping things up here and thanking everybody that stuck with us on this. The next slide is just kind of a reminder of the key findings that basically say we're not in good shape in terms of being ready for addressing an epidemic or pandemic. It hasn't been really something that has given the attention that it needs to be. And then, Jim, I think we have a couple of or three recommendations and plans here. And one is that you must make the medical epidemics and pandemics an integral part of your disaster recovery plan because sooner or later, as we've said, something's going to happen. And particularly, information economy businesses should be able to function very well because it's not something that's going to go away, although a month from now it may be that it turned out that this turned out not to be an extremely serious situation and everybody's back to saying, well, gee, this was another false alarm. I don't think it was a false alarm. I think it's a wake-up call.
There's no question this is not a false alarm. This is a serious situation now. We both pray to God that it doesn't become more serious, but this is not something that's made up.
Exactly. And so far as additional resources, we're going to be continuing with a business continuity and disaster recovery survey that will be available at the URL you're seeing here on the page. We would encourage you to follow our comments in the wide area networking alert. And also, Jim, we have both your blog and my blog that we're going to be continuing to look at this and certainly would love to have folks comment on what they've just heard here at the blog spots.
Steve, thanks so much for driving the overall research and obviously for the particular research here. Some of the results were, while not surprising, were somewhat disturbing, and I'm certainly looking forward to the completion of the overall study. So thank you again, Steve.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me.
And thanks to everybody listening to the podcast. And as Steve pointed out, some of these resources, please continue to go to them, and we'll continue to work to try to understand what people are doing around business continuity, disaster recovery, and to make some suggestions for what we think they should be doing. Thanks to everybody here today. Thank you.